Hey, listeners, it's episode 104 of the Fire Rescue Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, AZ, and today I sat down with a seriously good dude, Mike Connor. Mike is the Chief of Staff and Research for Frontline Mobile Health, and we talked about all of the things health-related. We talked about blood testing, blood markers. We talked about cardiorespiratory fitness and testing. You are going to love this episode. Please, please give it a rating, give it a review. Also, if you're listening to this episode on the day it drops, get registered for 7-Minute Science. It is held as a webinar April 29th at 6 p.m. Central Time, Central Time. I hope to see you there. Here's Mike.
Thank you for joining me on the Fire Rescue Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, AZ. I find the research and resources and then provide the fire service with the so what, now what, to ensure the health and well-being of every member of our profession. Together, let's thrive.
That would be nervous.
Countdown. We're counting down, Mike.
Get it together.
Hey, listeners, it's AZ, and I'm here with my friend Mike Connor. Mike, say hello to the listeners.
Hello, listeners.
Welcome to the show. This has been a long time coming. It's kind of funny. If I remember correctly, we actually know one another through the Vanessa Pflugerville.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
From
yep.
LinkedIn. Awesome.
Total rock star. Yeah.
Vanessa's great. She's great. She's great.
That whole organization is great. From leadership down to the lowest firefighter. They're all just good dudes.
Well, I have it on my bucket list to go visit and also to meet Chief Perkins. So
oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm putting that out to the ether.
You should. You're committed now because you've said it out loud and publicly. So
I know. And sometimes these things take a while because Dr. Mark Abel asked me like 18 months ago to come visit his lab, and I'm just going to visit this coming weekend.
Oh, yeah. I'm such a fan of what he does, all the VO2 work out there.
Yes.
Him and Emily Langford.
Yes.
One of his PhD students who now teaches, runs a lab. They put out some really good stuff. We actually talked to Mark. Me and our ex-phys have talked to Mark about some of the stuff that we do. So it's kind of cool.
Wow. He is awesome. Emily's awesome. This is just such a great sort of like incestuous family of people
I think
I know.
The whole tactical research space is just amazing. Filled with good dudes. You know, yeah. I listen to your podcast, Jay Dawes, Mark Abel, Brian Newman up at Fort Worth, obviously Vanessa. Just very, very, like pleased to be associated with some of those people and kind of working in the same space for, you know, the public safety space.
Same. And also one of my favorite things about you is that you call me and everyone else, dude. I love that. It's so funny.
Oh yeah.
I get a text from you and it's like, dude.
Yeah. We have this organizational culture thing that we really double down on in our company. And it's called just being a good dude.
I like it.
Yeah. Just be a good dude to your patients, be a good dude to your peers. You can never go wrong, and everybody, you can't really confuse like what a good dude is. Mm-hmm. Right. You just know a good dude whenever you meet them in person, you know, dude or dudette, whatever your fancy is, but yeah.
And tactical is full of good dudes. You're right. Well, before we get on to, you know, a whole bunch of rabbit holes, I want the listeners to know who you are. So first question first. Who is Mike Connor?
Yeah, so I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a clinician. I'm a PA, right, by training. And then I'm a public safety advocate, at least an aspiring public safety advocate. I think, you know, nobody goes into the public safety business because they want to be a jerk or they generally want to be good dudes, right? They generally want to be good people, and give back to their communities. So a public safety advocate and then aspiring adventurer, right? So that kind of stuff.
Well, and I always make this mistake. I should press record right when we get on the call and I didn't, but we were talking about your family and tell me again, you brought two, your wife brought two, you had two more. So you're kind of like modern day Brady Bunch.
Oh yeah. That's exactly it. We've got six kids. It's a busy house. My wife is amazing. And she helps us kind of balance that. You know, I think every husband will always say that like, their wives are kind of the CEOs of the home. So we just kind of execute and they're told what to do. And we try to do it as much as possible.
And you carry over that being a good dude at home, I hope.
Yes. No. You have to. Communication, treating each other with respect. Yeah. All that stuff.
Amazing. All right. Next question. What sets your soul on fire?
Man, you know, so I cheated. I listened to your podcast, so I knew some of these, but honestly, my first gut reaction to that statement is seeing improvement. Nothing fires me up like coming back to an organization the following year of doing physicals for the first time, or just physicals in general. And you see somebody who was in, you know, not so great shape the year prior, and then they listened and they took to heart what you talked about and that patient education, and you see just this massive change. You know, I can think of a guy out in Hutto, who 1 year I had a very serious, it was my first year, with, you know, Frontline, and it was a very serious conversation. And the next year I came to set up and I was kind of walking in the training room and we're setting up gear, and, this dude comes in and he's like, "Hey, how you doing?" I'm like, "Hey, I'm Mike with, you know, with our company. We're here to set up and do this stuff." And he's like, "Yeah, man, you saw me last year for my physical." I didn't even recognize him because he had lost so much weight. And he's maintained to keep it off, and he's continued to keep it off and stay healthy. So that's the kind of stuff that like really fires me up, is when patients listen to what you're saying and they make those changes and they turn out and they reduce their risk, right? It's just so cool.
Well, and I think that it's really, just from speaking with you, the how we communicate on social media and then the couple calls we've jumped on, I feel like it's all in the messaging, and it's the way you present the message that makes them want to receive the message. That's important. Yeah.
No, 100%, right? You can't use like really, really, not to insult anyone's intelligence, but like I have a feeling that sometimes whenever healthcare providers talk to patients, they may talk a little bit over their heads, or they don't break things down simply enough, right? A good educator is somebody who can explain things simply and eloquently and not leave the person receiving the message confused. And I think that's what we really double down on, right? Is just being able to communicate to people and then just really just giving a shit about them. Right? Mm-hmm. That's super important, obviously.
Well, and I think that through your answer of what sets your soul on fire, you somewhat answered the question of how you're changing the world. But do you have anything to add to that question? How are you changing the world?
Yeah. So, you know, my business partner, Russ, and I, we're really good friends. We go way back to Army days. And one of the first things we did before he deployed to Afghanistan, and I was going to kind of run the business while he was deployed, was we sat down in a room and we were like, "Hey, let's talk about what we want to do as a company." Right. And we were just taking care of firefighters at the time, so this kind of expanded into the law enforcement space as well. But I had this bold statement of like, "Hey, I really want to change 1582 and the way we take care of firefighters." Right. Like, I really want to find a way to contribute to changing the way public safety people are taken care of, and having and educating our peers, right? The people, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, on what the risk is, what the risk really looks like for a firefighter and a police officer. You know, cardiovascular risk, much greater than, you know, the general public. Cancer risk, much greater than the general public. Mental health risk, much greater than general public. Framing return to work, right? Like, just because, you know, your patient who sits at a desk all day is ready to return to work, that's not the same as a firefighter who's ready to return to work. So changing 1582, and the way I went about, or I decided that we could do that, was taking some of the information that we gather from our physicals and offering it up to institutions of higher education, like Jake Moda's lab, Dr. Moda out at Texas Tech.
Shout out, Jake.
Yeah. Shout out to Jake. And Keeley and McKenzie and all the folks out at the NOPL, but producing research. And so we take our data, our firefighters fill out a form that say like, yeah, you know, you're, you know, and we always frame it this way, like, this is stuff that's going to help the industry. So that's why we take it, we de-identify it, and then we just kind of mash it through and try to look for patterns and formula and kind of just stimulate thought, really.
And firefighters, if you are ever approached about doing research, just know that you know, it is, the data is de-identified. No one mm-hmm. is going to be reading a publication saying, you know, John Smith's blood pressure yep. was whatever. Your information is safe, and it is so important to participate in research if you have a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. The way I frame it whenever I first go talk to departments is I tell them I'm too pretty for prison. I don't, right? Like, we have to de-identify that information. There are HIPAA laws in place. Those fines are hefty. And yeah, no, I don't think I'd survive well in prison.
So. I agree. But although, you know, rabbit hole, with all your jiu-jitsu training, I think that you would have a decent chance, right?
Yeah. I'd probably be better than the average guy, but yeah.
Well, and one of the things that you and I spoke about, and I really appreciate you said this, you said you didn't want to make this about your business or make yep. it like a sales pitch, but also I think it's important to dig in a little bit and tell the listeners about what you do at Frontline, just so they can understand the rest of what we're going to talk about. So the mic is yours, my friend.
Yeah. So we're a, you know, a veteran-owned, family-run business, right? So Russ and I are retired guys. A lot of our employees are veterans. So we have a different lens on the occupational medicine side than your standard healthcare provider. Nothing against the, you know, your healthcare provider that's out there in the public doing goodness. It's just, we understand that there is an occupational demand that is associated with firefighters and with police officers. So what Frontline does is they kind of come in, they do annual physicals. You know, we do a wide variety of labs. We do cancer screening through ultrasounds and chest x-rays. We do cardiopulmonary exercise testing on a bike. And we'll talk about some of that stuff in the future. And then when we're done, what we do is we aggregate all of the data, behavioral health, medical, fitness, and then we present it to organizations, the organizational leadership. And the reason we do that is there is no better way than to ask for funding for something if you have the data to support it, right? So we need to fund a health and wellness program. And these are the reasons why. We want to reduce the risk within our organization from cancer, reduce the risk from cardiovascular disease, reduce the risk from behavioral health disease. You know, recently I came back from an organization where everybody's sleep score was terrible. And I said, hey, what's going on with your sleep score? You know, is this at home or is it at work? No, it's at work. And I was like, well, what's going on at work? I was like, well, every time the tone goes off at one station, they go off at all the stations.
Oh, I hate that.
And I was just like, huh, that's interesting. And that was like the common message, right? So that's information that, you know, as an outsider, I can talk to the organization, say, hey, let's consider a policy change and maybe look at the way tones are going off in the organization. Like, you could, you know, when you look at sleep has such a big impact on not only behavioral health, but also physical health, right? You're like, that's when you're recovering. That's when you're, you know, for dudes, that's like for guys, that's when you're, you know, building testosterone. That's when your body gets to rest and lay down memories. So there's so many big impacts. So that's how we use what we do in that space, just to kind of help out organizations. And then we do some consulting stuff too. You know, some organizations don't have health and wellness policies. So on that end, we will help consult and kind of put into place some best practices for that sort of stuff.
Absolutely incredible. And I know that you operate in Texas, Colorado, mm-hmm. and is it
Georgia?
Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia. Yeah. We do business in, we're going to be doing business in Ohio, Virginia. We have business in Tennessee, Montana, Pennsylvania. Something else is going to slip my mind and someone's going to yell at me for it, but that's okay.
It's okay. We'll cut that part out. No, just kidding. So I love, this is such a good segue, because by telling about your business, you're segueing into some of the topics I wanted to hit with you. So the first one is, I've had guests before that talked about lab work, and people mm-hmm. are always fascinated by lab work. Many departments don't provide lab work, which is not great. But let's say I'm at a department where I'm not getting a yearly physical. They say, just go to your physician. Yeah. When I go to my physician, what are the basic labs that I should be asking for at a bare minimum?
Yeah. So great question. 1582 recommends, right? There's an appendices in 1582 and they say like, hey, you should be asking for these labs. And I'm in agreement with them, right? So a CBC, right? A complete blood count, right? That's going to tell you about your red blood cells, the hemoglobin, hematocrit, the morphology, your white blood cell count, your platelet count, all very important things. Next thing you're going to check is a comprehensive metabolic panel. That's going to look at renal function, liver function, your fasting blood sugar, your electrolytes, lipid profile is the other recommended one. And that's like your total cholesterol, your HDL, your quote unquote good cholesterol, your LDL, your quote unquote bad cholesterol, your triglycerides, and then your urinalysis, which is, just looking for like stuff going on usually after the kidney. So the ureters, the bladder, the urethra. And then if there is like evidence of like early kidney disease, and then, and that's what 1582 recommends. I would add on for basic labs that most providers would be happy doing is if you're a guy, prostate specific antigen, a hemoglobin A1C, because you can really use hemoglobin A1C to kind of match up what your glucose is doing, right? Hemoglobin A1C is a kind of a long word for like the amount of sugar that's stuck on a red blood cell. Because red blood cells have a life cycle of somewhere from 60 to 90 days, it shows us longer patterns of what your dietary habits look like and what your risk is. And then an FOBT. FOBT is a fecal occult blood test. That should start a little bit earlier than general population just because of the risks that firefighters have. And that's kind of the basics where I would start off with.
And as you stated, most providers aren't going to bat an eye at those tests, right? I'm a firefighter. Yeah. Yep. I'm here for my yearly wellness checkup, and I'd like to add a few things on. Excellent. And I guess I should have asked you even before we jumped into these testing things, like, why is it even important to get these tests?
When should we
start getting them?
Yeah, so that's great, right? So there's two ways I like to frame this. The first way is, the Peter Drucker quote, what gets measured gets managed.
Ooh, love it.
Yeah. So if you are not getting labs, you don't know if your exercise habits, you don't know if your dietary habits are really having any sort of impact, right? So the first set of labs is what I would say like is your baseline. And then, if you see that you've got some improvements that you've got to make, the only way to know if you've been good about those improvements is by rechecking those labs. So at least you have a baseline to get started. And you can trend patterns over years. And we really encourage doing that with our patients. The second thing I like to kind of do is, this is kind of a shout out to a buddy of ours, Mike Rainey, who's a data science expert. I really like this analogy is that when you're looking at a problem, you want to get multiple points of view, right? So, if you're looking at the island of disease, right, out in the ocean, you want to get multiple ships out there with different views. Those multiple ships are like our labs, right? So your fasting blood sugar, your hemoglobin A1C, your lipid profile, those are all things that combined together give you a better idea of what your cardiovascular risk is, right? So if you have high hemoglobin A1C, high fasting blood sugar, horrible lipids, your risk factor is a lot higher than just somebody who just has bad lipids, but they're maintaining their blood sugar. So
how often would you have a civilian, just your typical accountant, how often would you have them have blood tests? And then how often would you have first responders have blood tests?
This is a tricky question. I think everybody should have an annual blood test, period. Right? I think everyone should have an annual exam, period, regardless of profession, right? But understanding occupational demand, right? The accountant or the administrative assistant isn't asked to put on 50 pounds of crap, run up a flight of stairs and drag somebody out, right? So, which quickly ramps up your heart, increases, all this cascade of hormones that come pushing down and really, really, there's a huge difference in the risk in that sense, right? So it's way more important, in my opinion, for that. We call it the tactical athlete or occupational athlete space to get testing very regularly and at a minimum on an annual basis.
I think that's great advice. So the blood test that you spoke about included in NFPA 1582 and then the couple that you added, if you had your magic wand,
yeah,
and you could order up all of the important things for a first responder, what would you add on in addition?
Yeah, there's not much more else, right? So there's not much more that I would add, right? Maybe like a handful of tests, right? We'll start off. We'll go with like cardiovascular and inflammatory, because those are the ones that have a direct impact on occupational performance and demand. And then we can talk briefly about, you know, the big scary one, cancer, the insidious one that kind of slowly creeps up on you. So talking about cardiovascular stuff, an ApoB, APO, and then in parentheses B. So whenever we check an LDL-C, that's like checking the amount of cholesterol that's contained in an ApoB, and the ApoB is the actual thing that transports cholesterol around. Quantifying that risk is important. And then there's something, so this one's kind of optional. If you have first degree relatives who have had strokes at a young age, or heart attacks at a young age, and by young age, I mean like third decade of life, you may want to consider getting a LP little a lipoprotein little a. That's a genetic risk factor. It just basically, the simplest way to explain it is that it's how sticky the bad stuff is, right? How well those fatty streaks adhere. And it's not influenced by diet or supplements, influenced by medication management. It's purely a genetic risk. And just understanding that kind of allows you to have treatment goals if you have hyperlipidemia. The next one I would say is uric acid. Uric acid is a byproduct of purine metabolism and fructose metabolism. Uric acid is one of those things where we know that if you have a high level of uric acid, that odds are you have hypertension, odds are you have hyperlipidemia, you increase your chances of type 2 diabetes, heart attack, stroke. It's just all of the badness. That is greatly influenced by diet. I'll never forget our old medical textbooks, right? There was always a cartoon of like this really big, like morbidly obese guy sitting in a chair with a pint of beer, eating like a steak, and his foot is sitting out with his big toes like angry.
Yes.
And because uric acid is the thing that's retracting in gout. And so it's always associated with gout, but it's actually a risk factor for all those other things too.
Actually did not know that.
Yeah. So it's part of a basic panel of what we do. High sensitivity CRP looks at the, you know, the degree of inflammation that's in our body. It's very nonspecific, right? So if you have autoimmune disorders or you have an infection, that can be elevated. Mine was like mildly elevated after I did a hard workout, went and got some labs done. And I was like, oh, why was my, and then it just dawned on me. I was like, oh, I worked out earlier that morning. So I wonder if that's what was going on. So, but in the normal state, it should be in that normal range. And, you know, the bigger context of it all is that when you have your blood vessels inflamed and angry, the inner lining of your blood vessels inflamed and angry, because you have all of these inflammatory things going on, it makes it easier for you to lay down fatty streaks, right, from high cholesterol. And that's the stuff that turns into plaques, and then plaques rupture. And then that's usually a condition that's suboptimal for firefighting.
I would say definitely suboptimal.
Yep. So those are kind of the Cadillac labs that I would say be worth your time getting.
How about testosterone?
Ooh, yeah. So testosterone, that's a man. So we're in the middle of putting together some testosterone data, because there was a recent publication looking at testosterone and fitness performance. So I wanted to reproduce that with our sample set. So we're in the midst of collecting all that stuff now. But nice. Testosterone's good, right, for the guys. There are conditions, right? There are conditions. So the thing I tell people is that, look, TRT is a personal choice, but understand that right now it's very, very popular, right? It's very, very popular. And it makes people a lot of money. So they're going to market, right? They're going to market for that. But if you're taking your testosterone, one, it should always be drawn in the morning. Don't do it when you're coming off shift after you've had a shitty night. of like 3 or 4 wake ups because testosterone is produced while you're sleeping and it peaks in the morning. So if you don't sleep well, it's not going to be as high as it normally is. it is a helpful lab. I can't remember the study that he quoted, but there's a popular podcaster, Peter Attia. He talked about some studies have shown that it actually causes a risk reduction for cardiovascular disease when they were looking at like cholesterol numbers and stuff. But when you look at the sample set, they weren't looking at 30 to 50 year old firefighters. They were looking at people in their 6th and 7th decade of age. So that's not exactly like an apples to apples comparison. So testosterone is a good one to know, just to kind of know if you're curious. But you know, there are ways of improving that naturally before you just immediately, you know, go straight to TRT.
Heard. I got you.
Yeah.
Great. Well, one of the things that you and I have chatted about a couple times before is cardiorespiratory fitness.
Yes.
And how we measure that and how the term VO2 max that everyone throws around. I'm just going to throw this in your lap and say, enlighten us on all of it.
Yeah. So there is an occupational requirement for aerobic capacity in 1582, right? Recently, that has changed, and it's been the subject of some controversy, I feel like, because it went from the standard like, hey, between 8 and 10, you're good, but you need to be on a fitness improvement plan. Between 10 and 12, you're good, but like a fitness improvement plan is recommended. And then above 12, you're just good to go, right? We're talking about METs, right? Now the new standard is by age and by sex, and it's a lot lower in terms of like bottom line requirements, and it's really, really hard on that 20 to 29 year old age group. I have, you know, some opinions on that. I won't mention my opinions here, but first we have to define what a MET is, right? So all firefighters know is a MET is a MET is a MET. It just means if I'm good or not to be on the truck. A MET is a metabolic equivalent. Jake touched on this the last time he was on your show. That's equal to 3.5 milliliters per kilogram of per minute of oxygen that your body's able to take in and deliver to your muscles. So that's basically like the gist of how we do that. A CPET is a test where let's rewind real quick. You can indirectly measure VO2 and you can directly measure VO2. When you indirectly measure VO2, it's usually some sort of treadmill type test, right? So everyone's familiar with the WFI treadmill Gherkin protocol, right? You walk for like 3 minutes, and then every 2 minutes it alternates between an incline increase and a speed increase. And then they're indirectly measuring your metabolic equivalent through your VO2. The problem with that is that you can be off in your estimation, right? I quote this one all the time. So it might have been like 2015, 2016, but one of Denise Smith's, some sort of affiliation with Denise Smith, but it was Dolezal, who was a premier author. And they had... I wrote some notes down here for our show. They had some things down here that said, 22% of the subjects within this test had plus or minus 5%. So they did the protocol and they had someone wear a mask. So they looked at the estimation versus the accuracy, right? So plus or minus 5%, 36% had errors greater than or equal to plus or minus 15%. And then 7% had errors greater than 30%. 30%.
Whoa.
30%. Huge, right? Huge. That's massive, right? So someone who's getting 12 METs is really like 9 potentially. And the blanket statement at the bottom was that there's a tendency to overestimate aerobic capacity in less fit individuals and underestimate in more fit individuals. So we do CPET, right? So we put a mask on you. We've got EKG leads on. We put you on a cycle ergometer, which is a fancy word for a bike. And we just have you pedal, and then the ramp just slowly starts to increase to where the hill gets steeper and steeper and steeper, and you're required to maintain a constant pedal state. And then we're sampling oxygen at the same time. We're not sampling oxygen. We're measuring your oxygen consumption. And that allows us to determine what your VO2 is directly measured as opposed to the indirect measurement. So that is an important thing for us to measure on fire service. And the correlation I've always made is like, look, if when you're on an SCBA and you've got a tank, your VO, the higher your VO2 is, the less of a bottle hog you're going to be, right? Like you're not going to suck that thing down really fast. So there's a direct translation for having. Now, you know, one of the studies that we, you know, worked with Jake's group was that, you know, on consumption testing, older, more experienced firefighters are actually able to do just as fine, if not better, than the younger folks. But, you know, when you look at their bottle times, usually it's because of economy of movement, not necessarily because their VO2 was so high, right? They're experienced, so they're able to manage that stuff a little bit more efficiently. So VO2 is really important. When we do a CPET, what we're looking at is we're looking at heart health, pulmonary function, metabolism, and then the one that probably hurts people's feelings the most is fitness, right?
Jake hates that word.
Yeah. So just, you're right. Jake does hate that word, right? Aerobic capacity is probably what I should say. Jake would be a little bit happier if I said aerobic capacity. So those are the things that we're really looking at. And you get a lot of really good information on there. You can find arrhythmias, you can find ST depression or elevation in peak exercise. You can find exaggerated blood pressure responses. You can find early myocardial disease, right? So sometimes what you'll see happening is your O2 pulse will flatten out or it will start to hockey stick downward, which is just, it's a really nerdy metric. And then your heart rate will skyrocket up because your heart rate has to compensate for that, you know, O2 pulse flattening out and starting to hockey stick. And that's usually an indication of early or kind of, you know, it's right there, myocardial disease. So we'll refer patients actually to cardiologists. And, you know, we've found people with RCAs and LADs that have required stenting after doing this test very frequently. Sometimes we find, you know, that a large majority of it is usually just fitness and requires a fitness improvement to kind of reduce risk. And it's all about risk reduction. You know, the number one cause of line of duty death on the fire ground is overexertion. Whenever you bucket the different types of categories that are under overexertion, cardiac disease or heart attack is usually the highest one. So it's just our way of kind of screening for that sort of stuff. It's very important.
I want to go way back and repeat sure. something you said
yeah.
in the Gherkin protocol that people, the fire departments are utilizing in their fitness testing.
Yeah.
It tends to, I'll say radically, but maybe that's not the right word.
Sure.
Radically overestimate the VO2 in unfit individuals mm-hmm. and underestimate the VO2 max in fit individuals. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, that was what the statement was from Dolezal in that study. Which, I mean, if you look at it in practice, it makes sense, right? You will see somebody on the treadmill and they are visibly struggling to get to that 10 or 12 met mark so that they'll be cleared for operational suppression. And you're just like, man, how are they getting it done? And then when you actually put those folks on a CPET, they probably don't meet the aerobic capacity requirement that's been set forth. So, but the one thing I will have to say is, and Jake said it too, is that if you're doing a treadmill, at least you're doing something, mm-hmm. right? At least you're using some sort of tool to try and get this estimation and have something built in. If you can, I would strongly suggest that people use a cardiopulmonary exercise test, right? Because that's, you know, the more accurate of the two, and then you get a lot better information. And that's the kind of stuff that really reduces risk in an organization. And that's kind of how we frame things. I think that if we, as the health and wellness people in this community, reframed health and wellness as risk management, you'd get a lot more buy-in from bean counters and decision makers, right? Because what they don't realize is what is the cost of a bad incident that was completely preventable through a good health and wellness screening and a fitness plan, right? You take a person, you know, God forbid it's a death benefit, but you take a person off because they had a heart attack and they've got to go through cardiac rehab and they hold a certain position. Well, you're not only paying for that worker's comp and that person's like ability to get back on the truck and that time off, but you're paying for the overtime for the person coming in, right? So, and if you're part of an organization that's pretty large, that overtime may be someone who's like what I've heard is called riding down, right? So they may be a captain filling a firefighter position and they're getting paid time and a half to fill that firefighter position. So you're paying a ton of money out. That's usually how we try to frame things. But from the good dude side, really, it's just to make sure we do these things. And Russ has said it best, in my opinion, is that like, we want you to drain the bucket of money that you've been pouring into for your retirement. Right.
Yes, sir.
You don't want to be that person who has a mishap at work or has a bad incident at home, like within the first couple of years of retirement, because you've never really gotten a chance to enjoy your retirement. So that's why there's so much importance on these health and wellness programs. That's why we think it's so important. It's just for the individual. But if you're talking to organizations, sometimes you have to frame it from the risk reduction side.
For sure. And listeners, I don't mean to flagellate the dead horse, but I need you to hear this. If you are running the WFI and you are running the Gherkin protocol and you have firefighters that are not meeting the standard on the Gherkin protocol, those are our most at-risk firefighters for having a cardiac event. And the number that they're getting is likely higher than actual VO2 max. So we need to intervene. We need to help these people.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. And I don't know why we frame it as such a bad thing too. It's so weird to me that it's like, you know, like, oh, well, we can't say this person's not fit. It's like, no, man, if it's an occupational demand, if you're required to go into a bad situation and perform at your best, then this is how you make sure that you're getting the right people in the door. This is how you make sure that you're continuing to keep the right people in those positions, right? Is by that you're reducing this risk. Because, you know, it was easy for me to tell when we were going to Afghanistan to tell people like, hey man, like you're not recovered from that ACL injury yet. Like I can't deploy you right now. Right. And, you know, you get this fight back from them and be like, no, you know, I can go doc, like, trust me. Like I can make
it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd be like, look, man, if you go down because we're in the middle of a firefight and you have knee instability, like you're not just taking me down with you, you're taking like a fire team with you. Right. Because not only do we have to pull you out of that situation, we have to have security. And it's no different than what happens in those Mayday situations. Right. If somebody goes down in the inside of a structure because they maybe weren't in the best shape or had some sort of pre-existing injury that they were like, oh, just soak it up and kind of push through, you know. When the balloon goes up and it's time to do those types of things, you really don't get the option of saying like, hey, look, like I know I said I'm good, but I don't think I'm good now.
Yeah.
Right.
So I've used this analogy on the podcast before. I think it's been a while, so I'm going to use it again. I desperately would like to be a Victoria's Secret model and walk the runway. However, I do not check the boxes to do that job.
Yep.
So just because you want to be a firefighter doesn't automatically mean you should get to if you're not fit for the job. Because again, I want to be a Victoria's Secret model.
Yeah. No, I have some strong opinions on some of the stuff that we do and I'll kind of hold back. But, you know, I've got some friends that are firefighters that that I've befriended. And, you know, one of them comes to mind. He's a Georgetown firefighter. And that guy is so passionate about what he does. And he is just getting after it all the time, right? Like you see him working out. You see him like doing all these things. You see him volunteering for training. And the way I liken it is that, you know, if you're in the military, one of the things that we have always told our folks is like, look, you don't rise to the level of your expectations, you fall to the level of your training, right? It's a popular quote by Archilochus, or I can't remember, some smart Greek dude. And basically what that means is, like, you have to train for the worst day of your life, right? You have to be prepared for the worst day of your life, right? And if you're not doing those things by nutrition, exercise, recovery, I think recovery is underrated too.
Yeah.
If you're not doing any of those things and you're just kind of hoping that, like, oh yeah, no, I'll be fine, then you're really not preparing yourself. And I think that that's where that intersection of fitness and medicine kind of come together. I'm a big proponent of fitness as medicine. Just real quickly as an aside, right? Like, JAMA released a study not long ago, right? If your VO2, if you're in the lower quartile of your VO2 on the bell curve, and you just move to the next quartile up, all-cause mortality reduction of 50%, right?
Dude.
Huge, right? So dying in a car accident, falling down some stairs, falling off your roof, cancer, cardiovascular disease, stroke, all-cause mortality reduction by 50%, right? The Journal of American College of Cardiology a few years ago wrote, or kind of did kind of the same type of analysis of stress testing, and said if you have an improvement of 1 met, 3.5 mils per kg per minute, you have a all-cause mortality reduction of 15%, just 1 met, and then a cardiovascular death reduction by 19%. So those are huge, right? And it's just a matter of, like, putting one foot in front of the other, eating healthy, recovering, doing the right things. And I think fitness is probably the best medicine that we can have. And we have these tools in place, so why not use them? It's cheap too.
I would agree. And one of the other things that we talked about is this frustration when people don't want to have the testing because they're afraid of something happening. Like, what is the message that we need to be conveying to these people that are afraid to do the CPET or the blood test because they're afraid to find something?
I guilt people. So I'm that healthcare provider that is like, hey, look, man, do you have a wife? Do you have a husband?
Kids, you got a dog.
You got kids, you know? Do you have someone that you love? You have to understand your risk. And I think I think it's been kind of perpetuated that if you bury your head in the sand long enough, it'll just go away. But that's not the truth. I think as organizations too, you have to be very forthright in explaining to people, look, this is not something we're doing for retribution. This is something we're doing to keep everybody healthy, keep everybody on the apparatus that they're on, and ensure that they're able to withdraw from that bucket of money that they've been putting into for their careers. An approach that I use whenever we're doing business with a new organization is like, look, let this first year be informational only. Make it a mandatory benefit, right? Like, let us come in, let us do physicals on everybody. We'll give them all of the stuff that they need to know. Be forthright about your messaging. Hey, like, this isn't going to be a fit for duty. We're looking at establishing these plans, right? And then you use that as your baseline, and you educate the patient on how you improve these things in the future. And then after those things have been improved and you've got a good thing going within the organization, then you implement policies little by little, right? And then, because you can't just, like, turn on the lights one day and say, all right, everybody, you got to meet 12 METs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't have that, right? You're going to injure people, number one, which is going to put them out of duty. And then number two, you're going to lose a ton of people, right? Like, it's going to be a staffing problem. So you have to build people up from where they're at to get them to be able to meet these recommendations. Then you have to also get them to be able to, like, understand and educate them along the way.
It sounds a lot like it's a trust issue between the administration and the line personnel. There has to be trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like, firefighters, police officers, man, they're just like soldiers. They're just like, what are they up to?
Yes.
I know they're up to no good. They're trying to keep me out of deployment, or they're kind of trying to keep me off the truck, or they're trying to keep me out of the patrol car. It's like, no, man, like, they're trying to do something good and provide you a benefit. Let them do it.
We are the best conspiracy theorists, hands down, out there.
Yeah. You know that Philadelphia meme where the guy's, like, pointing at the wall and he's, like, doing one of these wild things?
Yes.
Half the time, that's what we see. And it's like, no, man, I'm just here to be a good dude, chat with you.
Be a good dude. Gosh. Yeah. I think that everyone possibly might need a reminder, just when we go on the fire ground, mm-hmm. or when we get in a squad car, my risk factors, whatever they are, mental or physical, become your risk factors. And so it kind of comes down to, I think, if you see something, say something. If you've got a coworker who is morbidly obese and clearly struggling, it's on you as the coworker to try to help, I think. And it sucks. That is a sucky position to be in.
Well, that's team dynamics, right? Like if you're going to have a high risk occupation and work as part of an integrated team that's responsible for doing a high risk job, you have to be able to call bullshit, bullshit, right? Like, hey, if that person's a risk, I need to be able, I mean, and you know, tackling in a good dude way, say like, hey, let's go work out, right? Like, or hey, like, let's stop staring at our phone and sitting on a chair and let's go do something physical. Or hey, like, I really want to be able to depend on you and I don't feel like I can depend on you. And I think people are just afraid of that kind of confrontation now.
We are, but you just framed it so perfectly. If you are actually being a good dude, which a lot of times, I'm going to be honest, we're not being good dudes. We're being assholes. Yeah. But if you're being a good dude and having the conversation with a coworker, I think it'd be hard for them to say, shove off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I feel like I learned a lot today. Yeah. And I want to give you the opportunity, if there was something that, if there was a path that we should have shot down that we didn't, I would love to hear about it.
No, you know, I think, you know, I'm trying to think about, we talked about labs. We didn't talk about cancer screening labs briefly, but
do it.
The one thing I will say about cancer screening labs, right? If you're doing biomarkers, there's false positive and false negative rates you have to deal with, right? Which create a lot of mental duress. And for clinicians, even though you have a higher risk of cancer, it's what we're afraid of doing is like, hey, let's do a test on you that's like a very specific biomarker for a very specific type of cancer, but has a high false negative rate, right? Or a high false positive rate. You know, the false positive rate risks are that people don't realize like the amount of mental stress that you put yourself through and then the amount of potential harm if we do find something whenever we are looking at biomarkers. So that's kind of a, you know, that's a very technical and joint patient provider conversation that's predicated mostly on a combination of things, right? So remember that island of disease and the multiple ships that we want to get a view around. So physical exam findings, spirometry testing, chest x-rays, those, you know, your standard basic annual labs, those are the types of things. And then understanding risk. Those are the types of things that healthcare providers really need to know about screening for the public safety folks. And then, you know, if there's anything I want people to take away from this podcast is that like fitness is medicine, probably the cheapest medicine and the most accessible medicine that we have. And by increasing your fitness level, studies have shown that you're decreasing your chance of all-cause mortality. And that's so, so important.
And you had said something earlier, and I should have hopped on it way back then because I don't remember what blood test it was. But you basically said it shows genetic risk, and we really can't control it through diet or anything. We can't have an impact on it. But for most things, I would say, and please correct me if I'm screwing this up, but for most things, if you eat better, sleep better, do more physical fitness, most things are all going to improve.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%. Right. Especially if we're talking about the cardiometabolic stuff, right? So your cardiac risk. You know, sometimes you just don't win the genetic lottery for certain things, but you can mitigate. I mean, you know, a good example is you know, myself, right? Like my mom's got some heart disease. My dad died of a heart attack. Like 5 years ago. But I take really good care of myself and I have been since, you know, I first joined the army. Like I work out all the time. I don't eat like a jerk, most days. And you know, I live an active lifestyle. So I've mitigated a lot of my risk just by doing a lot of those things. You know, but I didn't win the genetic lottery either. Right. I think it's how we influence, you know, they call it epigenetic factors, right? Like how you influence your genetics from environmental conditions are really the things that matter.
I agree 100%. Well, this is the point in the show where I ask you about your dogs, and I think it's dogs.
So I have a dog. Okay. Yeah, I have a dog. So Iggy. Iggy is my husky and he's my good boy.
Bestest boy.
He's the bestest boy. My cousin's staying with me right now when we get ready to move to Colorado, and she's got her dog Reyna. So there's two dogs in the house now, but Iggy's our bestest boy.
I love it. How's the shedding situation?
Oh, it's horrible.
You're not selling me on a husky.
I'm totally honest about it, right? Like, I don't wear black pants for a reason around him, because it's just, I don't know how my wife does it. She wears black pants all the time, and I'm just like, there's no way I could do that.
Oh, I love it. Well, as expected, this conversation has been fantastic and intellectually stimulating, so I really appreciate it.
Cool.
I will put all of your contact information in the show notes, and I think, unless you've got anything to add, I think we can officially drop the mic.
Yeah, no, I think we're good. I appreciate your time, and thanks for having me come on.
Yeah, it's definitely my privilege. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.